What's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where it's all about making money, saving money, and getting out of debt, all while having some fun along the way.
And if you're new to the show or been around for a while and haven't done it, be sure to join our free email list where you'll receive access to work and money tips, interesting reads, and more. You'll also receive our free 15-minute money plan as a welcome gift. Visit paybal.co/email to sign up. Again, that's paybal.co/email.
And while this episode is dropping after Veterans Day, we still wanted to take a moment to thank all those who have served and continue to serve. So P&B definitely appreciates ya.
And we've got a few announcements. I spoke live at FinCon 18. This is our last interview, so there'll be some background noise, but I'm sure y'all will be sympathetic to that. I've already got my tickets for FinCon 19 on the low low, staying true to my word, while they were the cheapest tickets available in DC. Hint, hint. I won't go ahead and plug it again, but y'all know what y'all need to do. Y'all need to go ahead and make that move if you're looking to get into the personal finance space and want to be get your network on.
Agreed.
Jason Williams of USAA joined us, and Jason is a credit card product manager and veteran. With Veterans Day having just passed, as Rich mentioned, we want to thank the men and women in uniform for their service and thank Jason for coming on the show to not only talk about USAA, but also personal finance and responsible credit card management, which is a conversation I know we can all benefit from. Also, the blog is back. We've made it very simple. Just visit paychecksandbalances.com to see the latest. It'll drop each week on the same day as the podcast. That's Tuesday, in case you forgot. Or, of course, join the newsletter, as we mentioned above.
Yes. And there's a lot of other blog content that's been there that we haven't mentioned on the podcast, or that you haven't mentioned on the podcast, because honestly, fam, you've been writing a lot of the articles. So this is just making it more regular.
Yep.
And more consistent for the people, right?
It's actually funny you say that. I was going through organizing some things. There's actually a lot of content out there, so it will be better organized. I'm working on the site map, this being the weekend, but by the time you hear this illustrious podcast in your ears, my pain and suffering will be your benefit. So this will all be ready to go on Tuesday.
Cool. And so we'll hear from Jason later in the episode, but first, I know this was a bit of a topic in the Paychecks and Balances Facebook group. I know that it's also been a bit of the chatter on social media, but this idea, or not this idea, this new thing that's coming, this update to the new FICO scoring system. So, bro, what's all the hoopla about, man?
So I got a shout out to people. So at Nate, N-A-T-E underscore Rich K, actually sent over the original article. And then at the Journalista from The Root reached out about an article, which I'll plug in the show notes and I will quote from here because it was has already subsequently been published, was talking about the FICO score. So her article from The Root was, how will the new FICO scoring system affect Blacks and people with lower incomes? If you want to go and read the full article, a little bit of background about the change itself. The Ultra FICO reminds me of the Synergy. Is touted as a new way to score. It's all about branding. Consumers based on how they handle cash transactions and their bank accounts. So the modification with the new system is customers who are turned down for credit via the regular FICO route, which is probably going to be what most of y'all are dealing with, even if you get your score from TransUnion, Experian, or Equifax. FICO is like the gold standard. That's usually where they're pulling their information. The Ultra FICO places a heavier weight on the balance in your banking accounts. The number of debit card transactions make are overdrafts reflected in your accounts. So there's always a catch. Those with an average account balance of $400 who do not have an overdraft in the previous 3 months will be the most likely to see a benefit to their scores. Any initial thoughts, brother?
I was kind of skeptical, man, because anytime there's a new system rolled out, and I know they try to sell it as a benefit to the consumers, I'm always like, how does this help the companies? How does this help the lenders? And I was reading in another article that the average U.S. credit score, I think for the past year, I'd have to look again to get the specific date, but the average U.S. credit score is like 704, which I believe is the highest that it's ever been. And that a lot of these lenders were starting to get tapped out on reaching out to the folks or acquiring new customers who were in the great credit range. And so now they're trying to figure out new ways to be able to extend credit or to bring new borrowers on board. And this seems like a big part of that for them.
So basically trying to increase the pool of people they can extend credit to.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, always a scam. So I'm getting the numbers in front of me, so I'm pulling this from Experian just for their context. A good score is 670 to 739. A very good score, they break it down to 740 to 799. And exceptional, the credit scores go all the way up to 850. That would be 800 and above. And actually, did you celebrate breaking into the exceptional doors not too long ago there, brother?
I did, man. So I think I'm at like 820 now on the credit score front. So something like this for me, I'm not going to be looking to connect my bank accounts and all that stuff. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about that. But yeah, I've been in good credit territory, actually, well, I guess excellent credit territory. But there's always something. I'm sure there'll be some random charge or some expense from like years ago that'll pop up and suddenly show up on my credit report. But yeah, right now I'm enjoying that good credit life. But the other thing is, like, I don't have anything that I'm looking to purchase in the near future. And I feel like in terms of credit cards, the one I have now is the one that I'm going to use going forward. And yes, I do still use a credit card where I'm essentially paying the balance off in full every month. You know, I'm racking up the reward points and so on, which is a whole different conversation. But other than that, like, yeah, it's good to have the high credit score, but at the same time, it's not like I'm looking to buy a house or anything. So it's just like one of those things I'll periodically check to make sure nothing's going wrong. I've been focusing a lot more on net worth overall, which is probably an episode that we need to do.
I agree. And I do want to tell the people, I have seen from reliable sources that pretty much once you're over 760, you're going to get a lot of the best rates that you're seeing out there. There are some additional benefits, mostly towards credit cards and like the right type of programs that you can get in with 800. So if you're sitting out there, you're like, man, I'm in the 600. These guys, let me tune out of this episode. I don't want to salvage. Thank you for still listening. Really, 760 and above is what you're striving for. And honestly, I've seen it go down because to your point, the average was, what'd you say?
704, I think, is what I saw.
Yeah, and I don't mean low, like low. I just mean like low numbers. I ain't trying to offend anybody out there. But if you are looking to raise it, we're going to talk a little bit about how you can do that. And Jason speaks to that as well. As far as this specific FICO scoring, ultra scoring model, to me specifically, seems a little sketchy, brother. I'm not going to lie. For two reasons. One, like you said, I always think, follow the money. So I appreciate your background explanation for why they're doing it. I didn't think they were doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. Number two, and I don't understand. I admit that. I don't seem to be the only one. I read a few articles on this. But in order to figure out if you want to do the second scoring model, it seems like you have to get turned down for the first scoring model. So if I was a lender and I told them, hey, I want you to look at my bank account, to me, that would already, I would say initially, to me, that might be a red flag because it's like, yo, why can't I just look at your credit score that's been around for hundreds of years? Well, probably like 50 years versus this new scoring model. So I'll be interested to see how the industry shakes it out in the coming months. But I would feel like in the beginning, it's almost like you would be giving yourself your own red flag. Like, nah, don't worry about this, this credit report, my guy. Look at over here at this new Ultra FICO.
Yeah.
I mean, just overall, it just seems like a way to loop people more into debt that would either they already are banking and using cash. And then I also feel like I'm kind of interested to see who this market will be because, you know, most people can't cover an emergency of $400. So they likely don't have $400 sitting around in their account, let alone for 3 months in a row. So I'm kind of curious whom this target our new demographic would be.
I'm glad you mentioned the $400 part because I looked at that and to me, it felt like a pretty low threshold, especially given what you said about folks not even being able to cover a $400 emergency. And so again, on the surface, setting it at $400 and not having any overdrafts, it sounds like, you know, it's all about inclusivity and opening the doors for the largest number of people. But at the same time, I could also see that threshold leading to people down the road having more debt than they need, defaulting, et cetera, and that creating more issues.
Right. And let me clarify, I don't think it changes anything that you said there, but for the listening audience, it's an average account balance of $400. So most people can probably hit that if they have direct deposit, but they're likely living paycheck to paycheck. I'm just looking at the percentages. I ain't pointing no fingers now. Trying to be sensitive on this episode.
Indeed.
And then there's another caveat here, and haven't had an overdraft in the previous 3 months. So between the two factors of maintaining an average balance of $400 a month, which some people are probably going to be able to hit if they have direct deposit, and no overdrafts for 3 months, I don't know about that. That's where I feel like it gets a little bit more rigorous, given the percentages of people do tend to live paycheck to paycheck. But I do want to remind folks, and actually you talked about a little bit earlier, there's nothing wrong with using a credit card responsibly. I still use credit cards. I rely on one predominantly right now. I'm not going to particularly plug it, but I have my reasons. It actually is a very good card, though. It is with Citi. I can say that much, but I'm not going to go ahead and plug the actual card by name.
I think I know exactly what it is, but I'm going to keep your secret safe.
Yeah, I like the card. But, you know, a reminder, there's other ways to build credit. I wrote 5 tips to build credit history for those who don't have credit history for Go Banking Rate. So this isn't specifically a plug. I really did write this article. I wrote it several months ago, not even knowing this episode was coming. But 3 of those that would probably still tie here is you can open up a secured credit card. You can, of course, get those online. They're pretty much widely available at most credit unions and less so at banks. But some banks might have a secured credit card depending on your institution. But they're not that difficult to get. You put down the deposit and that is your credit card limit, plus any administrative fees that that bank or institution may have. If you already have a credit card or if you are thinking about opening one, but you don't want to do this new ultra FICO credit score route, I've also gotten a credit card that I never use. I might put an automatic payment on there just to get the benefits of the credit card payment and showing the use of credit score. So your credit score actually looks at, well, they'll look at as long as period as they want, but it's usually a reflection of a rolling 6-month period. So that's why some people are like, hey, I don't even use credit. My score went down. That's because there might be a number of other factors, but you likely haven't done anything with it in 6 months either. So credit cards do tend to be the easiest way for people to get their first credit history or build their first credit history. Just I want to remind folks, it's not the only way. And then while there's 2 other tips, the third one that I'm going to hit here, and I'll get this in the show notes again, that's building credit history for those who don't have credit. You can use a 0% interest loan. I know some people feel certain types of way about that. I don't feel like fighting about it. I do it all the time. Not fight, that is. Get 0% interest loans. I use it to pay off my bed. I use it to pay off my couch. I mean, to me, it's like anything else. I set a payment plan, and I think I actually paid off both early.
So it's not a consolidation loan, because normally when I think 0% interest, I think of credit cards, and I also think of those department store cards.
In this case, I actually think, now some people are going to probably feel some type of way about this institution, but if I remember correctly, both were issued through Wells Fargo, but they were issued by the company I was shopping at. So if you already have a good credit score, at that time, I think I had around 750 or something to that effect, they'll likely extend you a loan for 0% interest. So like I said, when I moved back to Austin, and honestly, when I moved to Denver, I sold everything both times. I came with the clothes on my back and what fit my car. With the exception of the TV this time. I still miss that baby. So I used a 0% interest loan to get essentially my furniture.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to there. It's a loan issued for something that you were going to purchase anyway. And the reason I say some people are against it is because I think they're like, oh yeah, you should pay cash. I'm like, look, I'm not in college. I'm not going to sleep on bean bags on the floor. you know, shout out to the people with the mattresses on the floor. That's not the game that I want at 36 years old. Like, I needed a bed frame. Well, okay. All right. Look, I did not need a bed frame. I strongly wanted a bed frame in my life. So I went ahead and made the purchase. I didn't have 6 months to save up cash to pay same as cash for this bed. And like I said, I set up a payment plan, which Jason's actually going to talk about later on about balance transfers on credit cards. And again, used responsibly, credit is not the problem. It's when people use it irresponsibly and then they look for something to blame. They blame the credit card or they blame the loan. I was like, really, within reasonable rates, and I'd say 0% is pretty reasonable, that's perfectly fine. That actually quite literally is same as cash. So, you know, there's definitely different ways to do it. And I talk about 2 others in that article.
Cool, man. And so I'm thinking about this a little bit more, too, with this whole ultra FICO thing. And you just reminded me of this, that if somebody is new to building credit and they see a card that they might not qualify for otherwise, and now they're able to qualify for it eventually down the road when this is rolled out more broadly, I guess it could be helpful in that sense. And I think, I can't remember if it was Budgetista or another guest in the podcast. It might have even been Jason Brown. It was either somebody in their family or someone they knew who was probably like late 20s, had never used a credit card. So they had like zero credit history, but they were extremely responsible with their money. So that's the one situation where maybe someone's trying to identify a particular card that they want and they're not quite in that range and they want to tap into this ultra FICO score to say, look, I've been managing my money legitimately. It's there. Give me this damn card. Or maybe in a situation where somebody is going in for a car loan and they don't have a credit history and they don't want to have to deal with the cosigner situation and they can say, yo, I got receipts, I got guap, my bank accounts are connected to Finicity or whatever the name of the app is, take a look at my Ultra FICO data so that you can give me the better rate on this note. So I could see it applicable in those situations where someone has zero credit. And I could even see it being reasonable in the situation where, let's say, somebody had a credit card or somebody had a loan taken out in their name or they co-signed on a loan for somebody else and that person screwed up the payments and then their own credit history or their own credit was negatively impacted to be able to show, okay, XYZ happened. Here's why my credit score is what it is. Here's what's actually in the bank. I have the money for this, but I feel like that's going to be the minority of situations versus the majority. And I don't have any data to prove that, but that's just my speculation.
No, I agree with you. I'm going to go in the apprehensive category. So it seems interesting. It is clearly meant to expand credit use and availability, but historically, Americans just have not shown an ability to successfully manage credit or debt. So I am concerned. I actually, respect the player, hate the game or whatever. So I respect their cleverness for coming up with this, but I think it is probably going to ooze gray the customers in the long run. More customers than it will help, I should say.
I read that the pilot for this program is supposed to start in January, and then it's supposed to be more commercially and universally rolled out by the summer of 2019. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes. Like you said earlier, who the actual folks will be who are taking advantage of this Ultra FICO score. And I'm hoping that if people are taking advantage of it, it's because they really legitimately like need it. It's not just to get a credit card, just to go wild and accumulate debt and then not be able to get out of it. So maybe you're getting a house or you need to get a car because you need to be able to drive to work. And so this is part of the natural process, but that's all to come. And so there's going to be a lot more that we'll see over the coming months. And I'm sure we'll probably revisit this later next year. Hopefully we'll have some listeners who've taken advantage of it and had some success stories or have went through the process and will be willing to talk about it and we'll see where it all goes from there. So every time I see Ultra FICO, I think Ultra Combo from this video game where you would hit someone with the 30 piece and it'd go Ultra Combo, which is clearly not what this is here.
I've got nothing else to add. I will be interested in seeing the testimonials. So yes, be sure to send those in to us or continue in the Facebook group. I'll be interested to see how this rolls out.
Yeah, as we sit here apprehensively. As we mentioned earlier, Marcus had a great conversation with Jason. And so we're going to play that now. And then we'll be back at the end to wrap it up. So here's the conversation with Jason Williams and hope you enjoy.
Yes, I'm Marcus Garrett from PaychecksandBalances.com. It's a podcast that you can find at PayBalances on all the social medias. And we talk money for millennials, helping you raise your paychecks and lower your balances, how to make more money and get out of debt.
Great. Hi, I'm Jason Williams from USA. I'm a credit card product manager, and I look forward to talking about what credit cards cost and how to make good decisions in that space.
So I see here since 1922, y'all have stood by members, provided guidance and assistance from helping establish financial independence to raising a family and retirement. We're actually probably going to do something around Veterans Day. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what are y'all doing in 2018 that you see differently or what do you see as future goals for USA?
Well, I love that the intro that we've been here since 1922, serving military members. And right now, we just have a focus about how to come back to the currently serving. That's our core market. And we're exploring ways to be relevant and in their lives every day.
Is there any changes that you've seen? I mean, that seems like a really long time period. So is fundamentally money management still the same from 1922 to 2018? Have any principles changed that millennials should keep in mind?
Some things are exactly the same. So my favorite picture at USAA is of our founder, and he's standing next to an airplane he just crashed. And so USAA exists is because back in 1922, no one wanted to insure people who flew airplanes in the military. It was too scary for them. And so they insured themselves. They came together and formed a conglomerate. And the reality is that backing those people turned out to be a fantastic business decision and the right thing to do. And so I think that's what continues. We see our military members, they do things that are risky every day, but they're fantastic people to be in business with and to support. And so that still guides us, and we know what our mission is, and we are happy to be in that space.
I love it. You mentioned a little bit of credit cards, and as it relates to either credit cards or personal finance, do y'all offer any different advice than the traditional spend less than you earn? Is it really that simple, or what advice would you offer for folks, or is it just that basic?
I think that that is good advice, but I think I would go beyond. I think you need to pick a credit card for the right reasons. And so I would just talk about what a credit card costs. Credit card has an APR on the loan. It has fees for services like BTs, balance transfers, our annual fees or late fees. And then there's the rebates. And the rebates are what you get for rewards. There are maybe dollars you get up front. And here's what I find people doing. They concentrate all on the rebates. They'll have fantastically complicated spreadsheets that talk about how they're going to get that next airline ticket, but they completely ignore the fees and the APR. And so what I would say is I want every one of our members and every one of your listeners to pay attention to what a credit card costs. Because think of it like this. Rebates are going to max out about 2%. And so that's good. If you play the game, you're going to get a full 2%. You have one balance transfer fee, that's going to be between 3 and 5%. And you're going to wipe out all of that work that you did on the rewards. And if you pay a really high APR, those rewards are going to be wiped out for 1 or 2 or 3 years. And so everyone to concentrate on what a credit card costs and what you have it for. And the other advice I give you is you never know when life's going to happen. So get a low cost option before a crisis. And so it's great if you want an airline card or travel card or rewards card, but make sure you have a low cost credit card with a low APR before a problem comes.
Do you have any resources that you're recommending for finding a credit card that works for these members or families?
So, there's great aggregators out there. And so all the sites that I think your listeners are familiar with, the creditcards.com and the nerd wallets. But don't just look for the highest rewards. Look for the total cost and make sure you have access to one of those low cost options.
And is a balance transfer ever worth it? And if so, then how do they ensure, this is a question that came up to me, that they pay it off during that balance transfer window?
So first, the mechanics of it, the balance transfer, you need to have a plan to execute and pay that balance transfer before it's done. I totally agree with that. But what I would say is when it comes to the point and you're managing debt with a balance transfer, you need to start coming up with a more comprehensive plan. And so I would say balance transfer sometimes is very timely and it's very helpful. It's a good tool, but it's not one that you ought to plan to be on indefinitely. And so we have people in the market that hop from one balance transfer to the other. And in the current environment, rates have been low. And so 0% balance transfers have been prevalent. And you think that that's always going to exist. As rates rise, those 0% balance transfers are going to fade away from the marketplace. And you're going to find one day that there is no 0% to go to. And I don't know when that's going to be, but your listeners ought to have a plan to get out of that debt before that day happens.
I like it. And for USAA members, is there any services that y'all offer that you feel that aren't taken advantage of? Or what services would you like to speak highly to that people should look into?
I'll say two things. So one, we're all about our military community. And so there are certain benefits that are ubiquitous across the card companies. One called SCRA, it protects service members from high interest rates. And so you have to report into your bank institution and say that I'm a person that had credit cards and I had them before I joined the military. And now I would like this SCRA protection. It can lower your rate for the life of the card. There's things called Military Lending Act that we participate in. And so if you come in and say and open a card while you're in the military, you're going to get certain protections. But beyond that, I would encourage everybody, whether you're doing business with USAA or not, to think about simplicity. And so it's very tempting as you feel that you're becoming more sophisticated to have lots of financial products and lots of credit cards and think you're going to maximize all these deals. And people often overestimate their ability to go and pay bills on time and manage five or six bank institutions. Find simple solutions first with good long-term deals and then add complexity very carefully. And that way that you won't get stuck missing a bill that you don't intend to miss.
And we also had a military spouse on the show. So she gave us a different perspective that I thought was good. That was Jen Hemphill of Her Money Podcast. She talked about having to adjust to multiple moves. Is there anything that you would specifically recommend for military families or as general guidance for people who might be facing moves in the future?
That was the biggest reason I was proud to be in USA. I was a lieutenant in the Air Force, and I moved five times in 9 years. And so I can really sympathize with that listener. I would say the greatest thing about having a big national institution, especially one with a strong online presence, was is every time I moved, I could make one phone call in and get everything adjusted. And all that moved with me. And so I would say having a strong relationship with a national institution is really helpful. And then just knowing your tools before the move. I think there's a lot of things that you need to do to just prepare for that move before you get there and make sure your financial institution is ready. And so that's my favorite part of USA is they were always with me no matter what part of the country I lived in.
I like that. And what would you recommend for veterans? I'm assuming here, so maybe you can clarify for me, that income might drop or might not be as consistent after service. So how do you recommend they reconcile their finances after military service?
Great question. I would say there's a couple of things you need to pay attention to. One is that the service is going to give you lots of great skills, but to some degree, it's starting over. And so you need to be ready to be hungry and humble and to take the opportunities that come and not wait too long to wait for that perfect opportunity. And so just be ready to do what is needed to be able to learn whatever new skill that you're going to learn. And the second is prepare for paying different taxes. And so this was a big surprise to me. When you're in the military, most people, unless you're living on base, they get a military allowance for housing. And that part of your income is not taxed. And so you're used to having a certain amount of your paycheck come in, and then you go in and you find a job and it's the dollar amount that you think it's going to be. And you're surprised. I was surprised that there's more taxes coming out. And you have to kind of prepare for the fact that life out of the military is going to have some different financial obstacles.
And to assist with that, do you have any recommendations or thoughts around, do military personnel need to look in individual retirement accounts, Roth or otherwise, in addition to this pension or other monies that may be coming in due to their military service?
Great question. So I think preparing from day one is absolutely important. And so the fact that the military offers a pension is a fantastic benefit, and it motivates a lot of people who join, but life happens. And so sometimes you're going to get out and you don't plan to get out. And even if you do get out and you get to the point where you have that pension, it's very prudent to invest along the way. And so while you're in the service members have access to what's called the TSP, the Federal Savings Program. I participated in the TSP and had payroll deductions just preparing for that when I got out, and it was super beneficial. I already have something in an account. And then you mentioned IRAs. And so I think that it's a great part of every plan to think about retirement, whether you're in the service or out, and start early. And so service members often think it's taken care of. I would suggest that you start making those financial plans because you never know when tomorrow is going to get here.
Is there anything else USAA offers or you'd like to speak to that we haven't had a chance to discuss or cover yet?
I'm a credit card guy and I'm passionate about my product, but I think for most people, getting started with a debit card and learning how to manage that is the right thing to do. And so we have free checking and we have some products that come with ATM rebates, and then we have some that come with debit card rewards. And so get educated, find a good free checking product, and learn how to manage your money with the debit card. And then I think there comes a time in everybody's life where they're ready to manage a credit card. But the best advice is learn how to manage those payments with the debit card at the beginning.
And as it relates to credit cards, as they make that transition from debit card, predominantly cash payment to living on cash, what do people not take into consideration that you think would be a grave concern or something that could help them have a positive relationship with credit?
I think the most important thing is there's a factual thing that people apply for loans and bank gives loans. But For myself, I find it more useful to think about a loan is something my future self gives my current self. And so think about a credit card payment as a loan. And there's appropriate times to go out and get a loan, and you need to pull forward income and be able to pay for something that you need now. I would suggest think about every time, will my future self and my current self be at least equally happy with that purchase? And so, you know, I was a lieutenant in the Air Force. I made a typical mistake. I went and bought a convertible sports car when I was 22. I enjoyed it thoroughly when I lived in Montgomery, Alabama at my first duty station. But then the Air Force said, you're moving to Ohio where it snows and it rains and there's a lot of ice on the road. And I had to sell that car and figure out how to carry that loan for a lot longer than I wanted. And so my future self was not very happy with my 22-year-old self. And so I think about every credit card purchase as something that the person in the future needs to be as happy about as the current person.
That was a great response. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Where can the people either find out more information about you, or where should they go on the web to find out more about USAA?
Just search for USAA or go to USAA.com, and we've got lots of information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I told y'all I thought that would be a good one. Jason did say something in there that I found ominous as far as the 0% interest credit cards. He believes that market will slowly go away as rates rise again. So if you are considering that balance transfer, it might not be there next year. So, I mean, take that for whatever you want. I just got one sent to me the other day, and his voice was ringing in the back of my head. I was like, is this going to be the last 0% interest balance transfer I see? So that'll be something else for us to watch in addition to the ultra FICO score.
Yeah, man, I really am curious about that. I hope folks got a lot out of today's episode. So if you enjoyed today's show, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. Today's review of the week comes from Take the Lead. Title, An Informative Must, 5 stars. This is a motivating show, the kind of show that needs to be shared. Oh, yes, it does. A great addition to the outside-of-the-box thinking that needs to be implemented to survive in the future economy. So Take the Lead. Appreciate you taking the lead on leaving that 5-star review. And if you want to leave a review for the podcast and don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. You'll find all the steps there. But yeah, be sure to leave a review. Tell your friends about the show. The more people we reach, the more people we help.
And remember that the blog is back from earlier. I know it's 30 minutes later. It might slip your mind, so make your way over to paychecksandbalances.com and find us in the e-streets as well. You can join us on social or Twitter and Instagram at PayBalance and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts at the Marcus Garrett with 1 T on Twitter. Someone was clowning me this weekend, and I still stick by it. 2 T's everywhere else on earth. Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
And don't forget to join our email list by visiting paybal.co/email, where you receive our weekly newsletter covering actionable work and money tips and much more.
Well done. And you know why.
Yes, sir.
So thanks to everyone for listening. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.